hello again, and welcome back to the Ostrich Technique, your little dose of a break from reality as we all stick our head in the sands. I'm one of your hosts, Anant.
And I am your other host, Chris.
Chris, yeah, how's it going? You know, I think this one, you and I were looking forward to it. I know certainly I was.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, this is, of course, Captain America, the Winter Soldier. I think easily one of the best MCU movies overall.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a good movie. I mean, a stark contrast from our last episode, Thor 2, where I don't think you or I were really looking forward to that one. And now we are, complete 180. I don't know. Whenever I think about this movie, I just think about my reaction coming out of the theater the first time that I saw it. And I just remember I was buzzing. I mean, like, I remember the Avengers, of course, was like truly a special moment. But I came out of this one sort of as a surprise. I didn't really know what to expect from this movie. And then I came out and I'm like, oh my God, like, what did I just watch? And like, I could feel like things just sort of changed for the MCU. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree. This is really where things start to change. Like, they go on a good run. You know, Guardians followed a few months later, and then Age of Ultron was not the best, but still wasn't bad. So I agree. This was not expected to be as good as it was. That was a nice surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's just so good. So, so good, top to bottom. And I feel, I mean, it's kind of a joke, but it's also not really. I think one of those things that, like, we saw in, like, interviews afterwards was how the directors, of course, the Russo brothers, talked about how they made this movie Honest Trailer proof. Of course, Honest Trailers being the YouTube channel where they sort of break down movies and sort of lambast them in a way. And I know you and I are fans of Honest Trailer, so. And I mean, it shows. This movie is really, like, a really tight movie. There's really nothing to really nitpick about it other than like these really sort of like tiny things, which of course the Honest Trailer does call out. But yeah, I mean, I guess let's just dive right into it. Chris, I don't want to, let's not bury the lead. I mean, there's a lot to talk about in this movie. It's a very consequential movie for the MCU. So why don't you give us the rundown?
All right. So this is Captain America, the Winter Soldier. It is directed by the Russo brothers, so Anthony and Joe Russo. It stars Chris Evans, Samuel L. Jackson, Scarlett Johansson, and it is about Steve Rogers struggling to embrace his role in the modern world. So he teams up with a fellow Avenger and S.H.I.E.L.D. agent Black Widow to battle a new threat from history, an assassin known as the Winter Soldier.
Yeah, that is the movie. So why don't we just jump right into it, of course, with Act 1. You know, in our other podcast episodes, we've sort of kind of walked through scene by scene. We're going to try something a bit different where we're just going to talk about like some of the highlights of each act rather than sort of going through it scene by scene. So it might be a bit scattered. So let us know what you think. But I don't know about you, Chris. I think for me, starting off, we get like this sort of, it doesn't really start off with like the big bombastic action scene like I think a lot of other movies do. This movie starts off with this sort of like human moment of Sam and Steve running around basically the National Mall. And you get that sort of famous line, on your left, on your left. I thought this was just a really good opening. It's like, it keeps everything down to earth, really personal. We get an introduction to a new character right away and he's immediately endearing. I mean, Sam Wilson is such a great character. Really feels like, just like a normal, I mean, he is a normal guy and they really humanize him right from the get-go. I mean, do you have any other thoughts on this sort of opening scene?
No, I agree. It's a good way to kind of humanize him. And like you said, it's a very good contrast to the big opening scenes that we've seen so far in the MCU where this is much more grounded and simple. I really liked it. And it added that sense of humor, which I think the humor in this movie was very good. It wasn't too over the top, but it was very well-placed. So I like this opening scene a lot.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, this is not, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, which of course is next episode, or this is not like Thor where like it's just a joke a minute. This is like very tastefully sort of jokes scattered here and there. And I think they work really well. And obviously Sam gets, I think, a majority, if not most of the jokes in this movie. Just he's great. Yeah, opening scene is great. And it also is just a good way to sort of put Cap into the modern world. Like he doesn't seem like he's sort of a man out of time anymore. Like, it seems like he has firmly, like, been brought up to speed. He is now firmly in 2014, which is when the movie takes place and when the movie came out. I like that he had that little list of his where he's, like, noting down things that he needs to catch up on. I mean, I think it's just a great little opening. And he's clearly a lot better adjusted than Tony is post-Avengers.
Yes.
Obviously, he didn't fly through a wormhole and see the infinite void of space like Tony did, but... Yeah, still, I guess he's doing a little bit better, but, you know, I guess Battle of New York was just another battle for him as a soldier, so I guess he's a little bit better trained for this than Tony was. But, of course, after this, we do get the Lemurian Star, which, I mean, I know I am going scene by scene, but these are really two, I think, some of the most important scenes in Act One. And man, the Lemurian Star just has so much juice in it. I don't know about you. Like, this is such a cool...
It's a good scene, yeah.
Such a cool action sequence. And, I mean, I know in interviews with the Russos, they said that the goal was to, like, very distinctly put Cap as, like, a different kind of Cap from the first movie, for sure. And, I mean, this shows. He's, like, so much more agile and stealthy and... I mean, he's basically like, I mean, we talked about this in Cap 1, like where Cap 1 and Avengers, he was more like almost like a boxer. This one, he's more like an MMA fighter. And it's just, it's such a good opening scene. I mean, Cap is just so, I mean, he's almost ruthless. He's so...
I mean, he's just kneeing people off boats and like just kicking everybody everywhere. Yeah.
And also, I mean, we take it for granted, but this is also the first time that we actually see his shield being used more offensively than it is literally as a shield. And I know that that's also a major creative choice that the Russos made, which I think to great effect. I mean, the shield is such a, it's become almost like a part of the fighting language of Cap. And it's just great to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, it also, the Lemurian Star also serves like a good purpose of like laying in that sort of layer of political intrigue. Like there's stuff going on that like Cap isn't aware of, and like Nat's doing stuff on the side, and the strike team is doing stuff on the side as well. And it's sort of it all of these sort of like points of intrigue really sort of layer on top of one another. And it just again goes to show how well this movie I think is really constructed, that it really starts right from the get-go where you find out what the Lemurian Star is. You obviously hear a little bit of a nugget that it's like a satellite launching point, that it's run by S.H.I.E.L.D., that Cap didn't know it was run by S.H.I.E.L.D. And then, of course, you find out what it was meant for and what it was housing and that sort of thing. I mean, it just works so well right from the get-go. I mean, such a good opening. I mean, I don't know if you have much more to say about it.
I don't. I again, really strong opening, really cool action sequence in the dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, just overall is really a great opening.
One thing that I also have to mention, which really does come into the play in this scene and then throughout the movie, is the music. I mean, this is another one of those few movies, at least early mid MCU, that really has sort of iconic music, I would say at least. Like this is one of those few soundtracks that I feel like I actually listen to outside of the movie. I don't know about you, what any of your thoughts on the music, but I really like the music in this movie.
Ever since the first time I saw this, I always remember like the Winter Soldier's theme.
Oh yeah.
Like kind of that screeching sound. I don't know. It stuck with me. It's like definitely like a very unsettling sort of score for that, but it fits the character, which, you know, kind of plays to your point that it's memorable.
Yeah, no, it's such a good score. I mean, it's a shame that that score really isn't ever used again. Obviously, he's never really the Winter Soldier like he is in this movie, Bucky, but... Yeah, it's such a good score. I mean, through and through, the Lemurian Star score is so good. Bucky's score is so good. The end credit score, which we'll obviously talk about, is so, so good. I mean, that's basically the theme for Cap 2, essentially, but it's so good. Everything about this the music is just, it's so on point, and it's so different from the sort of regal, old school sounding theme that Alan Silvestri did in Avengers 1, but it's a fantastic score. If you haven't listened to it, please do listen to it. It's fantastic. Lemurian Star, Taking a Stand, two of my favorite tracks on the soundtrack for sure. But yeah, I mean, Chris, I've gone through two scenes from Act 1. I mean, what are two scenes that stuck out to you from Act 1?
Well, the Lemurian Star, 100%. I don't know. The opening's just so strong.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think, if there any ones that really stuck out more to me than those two? I feel like Cap finding out what Project Insight is and kind of like that whole conversation between him and Fury was pretty cool. The show, again, showing that Cap is this sort of moral character and you know, Fury having much a much different perspective. I think it was really cool to see the different perspectives of how, I guess, Cap didn't agree. And it kind of, again, seeds these ideas, you know, these character traits that come up in Civil War.
Right. You
know, where Cap is essentially going against, you know, higher authority for what he thinks is best. So I would say that scene between him and Fury stuck out to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great scene. And it's interesting because, you know, when they talk about Project Insight, it seems like they're sort of going through this entire mystery of what Project Insight is. But I mean, Fury basically explains it in the beginning, like what Project Insight is that they will target and neutralize threats before they really become a threat. I think what was really the sort of, I guess, information that's revealed through the movie is that a lot of the people that they are targeting as quote unquote threats are ordinary civilians for the most part. Like that's, I think, really the major revelation about what Project Insight is. And of course, you know, who's running it, which we will discuss. But yeah, I mean, it's a great scene. It shows the difference in philosophies for sure. It's also a very logical progression of like where things have gone post-Avengers. Of course, Fury talking about how this all came out of, you know, the Battle of New York and how they needed better threat analysis. And I don't know about you, but like just the thought of like these three ships flying around and being able to kill anyone without really any sort of impunity is pretty terrifying. Yes. Regardless of whether they are quote unquote terrorists or whether they are ordinary people, just the general thought of that is pretty scary. So I think in that sense, Cap was pretty justified in his skepticism of it.
Yeah, it's not freedom, it's fear.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's another point also. The dialogue in this movie is just really good. The script overall, like this isn't freedom, this is fear. I mean, I'm trying to think of some other lines maybe, but it's just so, so good through and through. I mean, Marcus and McFeely did a really good job on the script, as they've done, I think, with really every movie that they've worked on in the MCU. So
I will say, I don't know how I forgot this, but the other scene I would say was the apartment scene with Fury, or I guess even the lead up to that, you know, and Fury's being chased.
Oh, yeah.
By the cops in the street, and you know, the Winter Soldier appears for the first time.
Yeah. Chase, great action scene for sure.
Yeah. And then, following the, we see Fury camping out in Cap's apartment, basically telling him he can't trust anybody. And then Fury gets shot through the wall and is left in critical condition. And then Cap chases down the assassin who is the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
That whole sequence was just really, really nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic, I mean, that whole sequence is just really, really great. I completely agree. The actual chase is really good. I mean, this movie works on a lot of levels also because we also get more information on S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, we've always seen S.H.I.E.L.D. as a sort of like, we got a little bit of S.H.I.E.L.D. obviously in the Avengers. We got to see like the helicarrier and that sort of thing. But we also in this movie get to see more of how S.H.I.E.L.D. works. So to immediately sort of subvert that expectation that clearly something's wrong at S.H.I.E.L.D. and then like actually going after Fury and going after Cap, for example, you know, it's such a great sequence. Of course, one thing that you mentioned about the apartment scene, or one thing I guess you didn't mention about the apartment scene is the music that's playing when enters in
the record player.
The record players, of course, is referenced later on in the MCU in a pretty
touching,
nice way. Yeah, in a nice touching way. But another thing that they do mention, that Fury does mention he's married, which I didn't realize technically ties into Secret Invasion, which is...
It was definitely retconned, but yeah.
I mean, it was kind of retconned, but I mean, it's just interesting that he does kind of mention it here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is also the first time, the chase is the first time that we actually hear the Winter Soldier theme, because like you were mentioning, that sort of like eerie, almost grating metal sort of theme that's associated with him. I mean, just really, really great. And I mean, I think what works about the Winter Soldier is, again, kind of like Jaws, is like they use him with a level of restraint, which I think keeps him mysterious and very ominous as a figure throughout the movie. Just really, really well done. Scene, really, really well done act. I mean, is there anything else within Act One that sort of sticks out to you?
There definitely is, but I can't think of off the top of my head. I mean, we get introductions to some other key characters like Sharon Carter or Agent 13, you know, is Cap's neighbor or undercover neighbor. And then we get to learn more about, you know, Sam Wilson. I think just again, small little seeds that we plant for these characters, and you know, we obviously learn more about them throughout the movie. I think it's done very well.
Yeah. No, it's great. I mean, I think one last thing that I want to mention within this act is we sort of go through the Smithsonian with basically Cap's background. We sort of see like bits and pieces about what happened to Cap. And I mean, it seems like a bit throwaway, obviously. Like, it, I mean, if you've seen the movies, you don't really need it. But I think it was also a pretty smart way of reminding us of really the most important bits of Cap 1 and speaks to the sort of ethos of the MCU, at least early on in this sort of phase. I mean, it's only been 6 years since it started by this point that they were really seeding in the important bits of Cap 1. So like, even if you hadn't seen Cap 1, you knew everything about Cap that you needed to sort of going into this movie, that he's a man out of time. He was, I guess, juiced up with the super soldier serum. And yeah, now he's in 2024 and you get a little bit about his relationship with Peggy and whatnot. It's great.
2014?
Yeah, in 2014. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And probably the one last big piece that we're missing is what was on the Lumerian Star.
Yeah.
It's revealed at the end of this act, and it is the last thing, I guess, that Fury hands off to Cap before presumably dying.
Right.
It is, you know, that flash drive, which kind of is a MacGuffin.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of a MacGuffin, right? Yeah, because it has that basically an algorithm, which we find out later. And I think, again, it's also just good to see in this movie how Cap is intelligent. Like, he has more of like this sort of, once he realized stuff is going on, like he's always thinking like maybe one step ahead of like, you know, maybe I should hide this USB if I'm like going into S.H.I.E.L.D. to talk to Alexander Pierce, for example, of course, played by Robert Redford. It's great. I mean, the USB stick, you find out what it is. And of course, the end of the act is where Alexander Pierce and Cap have a conversation about like what happened to Fury. And clearly neither of them trust the other. And Cap is trying to leave the Triskelion, which is S.H.I.E.L.D.'s headquarters. Which, you know, for a covert, you know, wing of the government, this is a pretty prominent building, I have to say.
It is.
And any other final points on Act 1 here?
When I was rewatching, I really couldn't believe that Cap put such an important device in a vending machine, hoping that nobody else would, you know, want those sticks of gum before it or see it and then just try to get the USB.
Yeah. I don't know if that was a risky move. Yeah, I don't know if that was an indictment of Hubba Bubba bubblegum that like just no one buys it or, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that is Act 1 then, I guess, if that's all you have. That's really all that I had there. Yeah, I guess we can jump right into trivia this time. Of course, last time you asked me the questions, so this time I will be asking you the questions, which is a bit of a shame because I did kind of want to do the trivia on this one, but it's okay. I will ask you the questions and sort of vice versa because I know Guardians is one of your favorite movies you'll be asking.
Oh, we could have swapped. Why didn't we think about that? Oh, well, too late now.
Yeah, too late now. It's okay. All right, so let's go into it. And this one does not have any multiple choice. I think these are hopefully straightforward questions. So let's get into it. So first question. So of course, in Act 2, we meet Arnim Zola, and he says that his mind is on 200,000 feet of data banks. How large is that file? And this is assuming that the tapes are from the 1970s, not like 2014 tapes.
How am I supposed to get this?
Just take a
this
guess.
Is math? Okay,
no,
how many?
Not math. Just so he said 200,000 feet of data banks. How big is the file? Do you want me to make a multiple choice? I didn't initially conceive of it as multiple choice, but I can make a multiple choice.
Well, you don't have to. I don't know. They're different scales. Like, I feel like it's definitely terabytes.
Well,
data.
Remember, these are 1970s tapes, so...
But there's just a lot of them. I have no idea, honestly.
I can give it to you multiple choice for half points if you want it.
Fine. I'll take it.
You'll take that? They'll take the multiple choice?
I'll take the half point, yeah.
Okay. So, choice A is 20 terabytes. Choice B is 500 terabytes. Choice C is 200,000 terabytes, and choice D, 15 gigabytes.
15 gigs just seems so low, but it would make sense that, like, first of all, I feel like there's no way it's like over 20 terabytes.
I mean, this is a human mind that we're talking about.
Yeah, I know, but like, I'm going to go with 20 terabytes.
20 terabytes?
Yeah.
Well, your initial guess was right. It is actually 15 gigabytes. Oh, roughly. It's actually 13 gigabytes. So, yeah, I mean, I had to look this one. I mean, it was when I was watching the movie, I was curious how much data that would be. So apparently, of course, the classic, I went to Reddit and someone did the math and they found out that it is roughly 13 gigabytes of data if it was using 1970s tapes. But if it was using tapes, apparently they still use tapes for some instances in 2014. But like with modern technology, assuming Zola had gotten it upgraded, it would actually be around 178 petabytes. Or 177,000 terabytes of data.
Yeah, see, that makes more sense in modern. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I could fit Artem Zola in my phone storage.
Yeah, I mean, you could fit him multiple times over in your phone storage, assuming you have like 128 gigs at minimum on your phone.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe he just had some insane compression algorithms going. He did.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he did design the algorithm after all, so who knows? Yes. But yeah, that's question one. So question two, another Avenger on top of Cap and Natasha was going Hawkeye. To appear in this movie. Okay, well, you beat me to it. Yeah, it was going to be Hawkeye. Yes, so I don't know if you know exactly how he was going to be used in this movie.
I know he got cut because they didn't have enough to do, so they gave the stuff to Natasha instead.
Kind of. Right? So apparently they were going to have Hawkeye be the one to chase Cap down.
Oh, yes, right.
So there were a couple of reasons why he wasn't in it. So one was the conflicting schedule for Renner. I assume probably he was filming
Mission Impossible
at the time, because this is 2014, Mission Impossible came out in 2015. And the other bit was, like you said, the writers didn't feel he was getting enough depth in the movie beyond like really a cameo. But yeah, you beat me to it. So that is one firm point for you there. So question three, there were a few other actresses in the running to play Sharon Carter, including three that ended up in the MCU. Name one of these three actresses.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Anybody in Guardians? Wait, I'm going to ask for a hint. Does that mean that they have not appeared in any MCU film prior to Winter Soldier?
Yes, they have not appeared in any movie prior to Winter Soldier. So okay, they will either appear, later on in the MCU.
Okay. I don't think anybody in Guardians. Age of Ultron. Elizabeth Olsen is an interesting one. I'm not going to say Olsen. Ant-Man is Evangeline Lilly. And we hit phase three, Civil War. I don't know. Elizabeth Olsen was in Winter Soldier, so I don't think it's Elizabeth Olsen. Mm-hmm. I thought you said these questions were going to be easy.
I mean, I think they're pretty easy. You know, I can give you half points if you want for multiple choice.
No. I'm gonna try to guess it. Okay. Let's go with Rachel McAdams.
Rachel McAdams, good guess, but incorrect. You really should listen to your gut, because Elizabeth Olsen was one of the people considered for twice. Sharon Carter.
This is twice within three questions. Okay, who are the other two?
Do you want to take a guess on the other two?
See, I would think Brie Larson, but I don't know. If she got a title role instead of, I don't know, Brie Larson?
Nope, not Brie Larson. I don't think Brie Larson was in this one either. So the other two people that were on this list were Emilia Clarke, who shows up later as Gaia in Secret Invasion, and Karen Gillan. So another one of your hunches.
Really?
About Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. Apparently she was on that list.
Okay.
Yep. I mean, I could see either of them working. So that is question three. Not doing so hot so far, Chris.
No.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I don't know data bank math.
I mean, fair. I think that one was, I feel like I started with the hardest one off first, but I think that these next two will be easier. I think genuinely will be easier. So question four, there's an actor connected to the Russos that pops up in act three What is the name of this actor?
That is connected to the Russos?
Like to the past of the Russo brothers, yeah.
Oh, I mean, isn't it like Abed from Community?
Yeah. Do you know his actor name?
No, I don't, because I haven't seen Community.
Okay, well, I'll give you the point. You're right. It is Abed Nadir, played by the actor Danny Pudi. And you also sort of got my semi-bonus question of what show is he from, which is Community, like you said. There you go. So now you have 2 points. Last question, which I think you'll get this one too. Very well talked about point in the movie is at the end, Fury's fake tombstone has a quote saying mm-hmm. the path of the righteous as a reference to one of Sam Jackson's prior movies.
Pulp Fiction.
That is correct. Yeah. See, I went from harder to easier. So you got 3 questions right. Not bad. I'm sorry about the data bank question, but I felt like that was a really interesting one. It was.
And had I listened to my gut, I would have gotten that half point. And then if I listened to my gut on the actress one, I would have got a full point on that one.
That's true. That's true. Listen to your gut, kids. Yeah. So 3 points. That's not bad, though. That's, I think, a pretty respectable score considering some of these questions.
Yeah, I will take it.
Cool. Alrighty then. So we will go right into Act 2. So, Chris, I started off with some of my favorite scenes from Act 1. So why don't you start us off with maybe some bits that stuck out to you from Act 2?
Sure. So I liked the whole bunker scene where they go back to Camp Lehigh.
Yeah.
And we really find out, okay, this is where S.H.I.E.L.D. started as like the SSR. And Cap, you know, does some sleuthing and realizing that, hey, there is more to this. You know, there's kind of a more modern facility like hiding underneath this. And that's where they find out, okay, there is these data banks. And they come to find out that it is the consciousness of Artem Zola,
mm-hmm.
who was in Captain America, the First Avenger, essentially the scientific right-hand man of the Red Skull.
Yeah.
So I think that entire scene was really cool because then we definitely got a lot more exposition about mm-hmm. what was going on. And there we find out the big plot twist that Hydra has been a parasite growing within S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
since the end of World War II.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is the big twist within this movie. I mean, what did you think about this twist? Because, I mean, I think no one really saw this one coming. I mean, this was a pretty big surprise, I think, to everyone who saw this movie.
I really liked it.
Yeah.
It changed the entire MCU.
It definitely did. Yeah. I mean, this was, beyond the Avengers, one of the most consequential movies within the MCU, just because S.H.I.E.L.D. had been such a fixture throughout all of Phase 1 and even through this point in Phase 2. So it was pretty shocking to find out that S.H.I.E.L.D. was basically Hydra. I mean, I know, I think one of the criticisms that came out about this was that they could have maybe seeded this a bit more here and there in the earlier phase. Obviously, granted, there wasn't really a plan for Hydra to be S.H.I.E.L.D., Hydra to be within S.H.I.E.L.D. really up until this movie. So that's, you know, hindsight why it wasn't. But I think it would have been nice if there were some seeds here and there, if there was that much foresight. But obviously, you know, at least Phase 1, they were taking it one movie at a time. So I can understand why they didn't. But I think for what it is in this movie, I think it does really work quite well. But yeah, anything else you want to add to that? I guess the whole bunker scene. I thought it was really cool that they tied again. It's another way, again, to tie back to also Cap's past and sort of explain us a bit of his past without requiring us to see Cap 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it was just very interesting to see the different events that Hydra has influenced throughout history.
Yeah.
And specifically within MCU history, kind of a confirmation that Hydra was responsible for the death of Howard Stark.
Mm-hmm. No, it's great. I mean, they seed it in a really interesting way that like Hydra has been basically destabilizing the world mm-hmm. and creating a need for them. I mean, it's basically the whole thing about people willingly giving away their freedom for control, which is, I mean, it feels almost prescient in a way about how things are sort of going in the world nowadays, mm-hmm. where, you know, some people really sort of seem to crave that control just because it seems like the world is getting a bit more disordered every day. But it was a really great reveal. You know, I'm surprised you didn't mention this right off the bat. Act 2, we start off with maybe one of the most iconic fight scenes in the MCU, which is the elevator scene.
There's just a lot of good things in this in second act. But yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, this is a movie that like just flies. I mean, this movie was only like 2 hours and 15 minutes. It's a relatively short movie for the MCU overall, but it just has such a brisk pace to it that it's so good. Yeah, I mean, there's always these sorts of like human moments, and then it's balanced by these like action scenes, and they're like peppered throughout it, and it's really, really well paced and edited throughout. And but of course, the elevator fight scene is just so good, and
it's so how good, yeah.
I mean, even just the build up to the elevator scene, like how Rumlow and then that other agent enter, and you see him gripping the weapon and ready to attack, and how Cap notices all of this stuff, like how the person's gripping the weapon and how that person's sweating and how the elevator crowds up. And it's like this sort of tense setup, and you can tell something is wrong. And then, of course, the whole fight breaks out, and it's just incredible. And of course, at the end of the fight, honestly, kind of funny just watching it, how Cap literally jumps out of the elevator and lands on the shield. And I'm just thinking how he didn't break every single bone.
I agree.
It's so funny.
I mean, I think the same thing. I thought the same exact thing when he jumped out of the plane and at the beginning, literally the opening scene with the Lumerian star. It just
he goes
without a parachute. Goes
in water.
Yeah, he would have just shattered every bone in his body or leg upon hitting the water.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even if he was sort of in that more streamlined configuration that he jumps into the water, it's hard. Yeah, it does matter how you fall. I mean, you have to suspend a bit of disbelief. He is a super soldier. This is an MCU where there are, you know, space wizards and aliens and stuff. So, I mean, I think this is something that we can sort of suspend our disbelief for. But in the real world, Cap would be in the hospital multiple times over.
Yes.
But
yet he's in the hospital after getting, you know, fighting the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Anyway, there are two other big scenes that really stood out to me. One we could spend a little bit less time on, but which is the first one of the Jasper Sitwell interrogation scene on the rooftop.
Great scene. Yeah.
What were your thoughts on that, Ananth?
Yeah, it was a fantastic scene. I mean, one is, of course, we start off with Jasper Sitwell talking to Senator Stern, making his return from Iron Man 2, played by Gary Shandling. And I don't know if you noticed how lewd the conversation was that they were having.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
He was talking about... He was basically talking about sleeping with a young journalist, and he's definitely like an older guy. So clearly the Russos don't think too highly of politicians and their sort of workings in government. But, you know, that was great. Of course, the interrogation is great, too. I mean, they don't really spend a ton of time on like mulling on it. They just sort of get him and then they start interrogating him. And of course, we get a little bit of like nuggets here and there, but like, we actually learn about what the algorithm is. So that's obviously the important bit for the movie. But we also get these nice little Easter eggs about, like, you know, people that they're targeting, including like Bruce Banner. Our first mention of Stephen Strange within the MCU, which was a nice little reference, who, of course, pops up as Doctor Strange in Phase 3. And I remember when I was watching this movie, of course, this came out in 2014. We were juniors in high school then. And the fact that he mentioned SAT scores is something that they track about people. I remember I just got such a kick out of hearing that. I'm like, man, you know, my SAT score is feeding into probably some sort of government database there. But great scene. Great scene overall. And of course, this is our first introduction to the Falcon Wings as well. So
a
lot of different bits and pieces sort of going on here. Again, it just speaks to how this movie is so economical with like every scene serves a purpose. Every scene is sort of driving the story forward, driving like our information forward as a viewer. It's, just a great scene.
And probably one of the other standout scenes of the entire movie that I think you and I can agree on is the Winter Soldier really makes his full debut.
Oh, yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
On the highway and then on the street. And I think this is one of the best hand-to-hand combat scenes in the entire MCU.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. I think really the only time the hand-to-hand has been bested here is probably only Shang-Chi in my mind. I can't really think of any other hand-to-hand fight scene that's been better than this. Can you think of anything?
But did Shang-Chi have a knife flip?
No, he didn't. He didn't have that sick knife flip that the Winter Soldier had. It's such a good fight scene. Like, it's, I rewatched this fight. I think I've seen this fight scene so many times on YouTube and just watching this movie. I mean, I've seen this movie also so many times, but it's such a good fight scene.
And the choreography is so good.
The fight choreography, all of the stunt and fight choreography in this movie is really just so top notch. The props to the stunt and fight choreographers of this movie. I mean, I don't know their names exactly. I should probably have written that down somewhere, but just top notch. I agree. I mean, you hit on two of some of the key points for me in Act Two for sure. You know, I think I did talk about the elevator scene, of course. Right after the elevator scene, just a brief scene there also is Cap, you know, escaping the Triskelion and S.H.I.E.L.D. Really small bit, but like him single-handedly taking down a Quinjet.
Yeah. Was
such an awesome scene too.
Yeah, it was.
Like jumping off the bike and like, oh, so good. It's so good. Every action scene in this movie just hits so hard. It's so good. You know, another bit that works for me in this scene, in this act rather, is, you know, Cap and Natasha on the run basically from the strike team. So then they go into the mall and, you know, they're trying to find out what's in that hard drive. And of course they find out like there's that algorithm, and then that's, you know, what leads them to New Jersey. I think that's also where the sort of stereotype of like superheroes undercover with like a hoodie and a baseball cap comes from, really, in at least within the MCU. Of course, I'm sure there's other movies that have used that sort of trope, but they of course use an Apple store, which I also thought was kind of funny that like there's no computer nowadays that you could really use a USB thumb drive in like they were in the Apple store, because Apple computers famously have removed a ton of their ports now. But yeah, and they're just also really smart about how they evade the strike team, like how Nat like has Cap put his arm around her shoulder and start laughing, and how they distract Rumlow by kissing on the escalator, which, I mean, very fair take that, you know, public displays of affection make people uncomfortable. And it's funny because I think when you watch the scene, you actually do end up looking away from them just because of that discomfort, and you're looking more at Rumlow's reaction. So it works very well. I think it's psychological, but it almost works. But yeah. Any thoughts on that scene?
I wonder if they like looked into actual research of, hey, a majority of people get uncomfortable, or if it was just, yeah, that seems about right, let's include it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's just so good. Everything about this act is so great. Yeah. I mean, do you have anything else that you want to add about Act Two? Of course, we get a little bit more about, I think the last big thing that we get in this act is also, we do find out that Fury is alive, the Marvel fake death universe. I think it really comes into full display here from Phase Two on, especially with Fury dying and then not dying. And they sort of set up the whole plan here and how basically Cap wants to destroy S.H.I.E.L.D. And I think rightfully so. I mean, what are your thoughts about that Cap wanting to destroy S.H.I.E.L.D. entirely rather than salvage anything from it?
I don't know. I get his point. I mean, he's had a lot of trust issues with S.H.I.E.L.D. starting with the Avengers, and then now this.
Yeah. Where
literally his arch rival organization has been within S.H.I.E.L.D. the entire time, and S.H.I.E.L.D. didn't know. So I could see why he'd want to get rid of it completely.
Yeah.
I think he's got a valid point.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It's really great because, I mean, I guess retroactively or proactively, they really do set up the seeds quite well. I mean, we obviously know where this movie heads into in terms of Civil War, but just really setting up those bits of like Cap's real distaste for government and authority, especially from the beginning where he starts off as like a pretty loyal soldier overall. And I mean, he starts to question a bit of Fury, but he never really goes that far because he just implicitly trusts S.H.I.E.L.D. And I mean, he himself tells a Peggy that the only reason he trusts and stayed with S.H.I.E.L.D. is because she founded it. Though obviously I don't think even Peggy really knew the extent to which the rot of Hydra was sort of growing within it. But yeah, just a great, great setup overall. And I think it made sense to destroy S.H.I.E.L.D. entirely. I think it adds more sort of weight on the Avengers themselves. And obviously without the sort of surveillance and technological might of S.H.I.E.L.D., they of course still have Tony Stark backing them up financially and technologically. So it didn't end up really mattering all that much. I guess they just didn't have a ton of spies helping them out with Nick Fury, though in some ways Nick Fury does still help them out later on anyway. So despite the impact of S.H.I.E.L.D. going away, you know, in retrospect, it actually feels a bit toothless in the way that it plays out later on in the MCU, that like, even though it's gone, you don't always feel that it's gone, you know, in some ways, which is kind of a shame. I don't know if you have any, I guess, final thoughts on that before we end up the and round out the act.
No, I do have a final thought on the act itself, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
We have not mentioned probably the second biggest twist of this movie. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The reveal of the Winter Soldier's identity.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we completely forgot about that on the highway. That's, yeah, Bucky Barnes. Yeah, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, obviously we know that it's from the comics, but...
Yes. I mean, but for those who were not aware of the comics or the character, you know, the character of the Winter Soldier from the comics, I'm mm-hmm. sure it was a huge twist, or at least they definitely planted the seeds early on in the film that this mysterious figure could be Bucky, just because of how often they were mentioning that Bucky was the only Howling Commando to give his life.
Right.
They have a whole section of the Captain America area in the Smithsonian dedicated to Bucky.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, it was a very, very big twist and a good twist. And to know that he doesn't even recognize Steve plays much more into his character later down the road in this movie and in the MCU.
Yeah. No, it's a good catch. I mean, I can't believe we didn't mention it, but it is a really great twist for those who are uninitiated to the comics, of course. And it adds, and I think what makes it better is that it adds again to that sort of personal tension and drama that like makes the MCU so great. I mean, we haven't really mentioned it through Acts 1 and 2, but really, despite all of the sort of like action and stuff that we're talking about, like really the highlights of the movie, there's always this sort of focus on the relationship between Cap and Nat, for example. That's really sort of the driving heart, beating heart of the movie almost. And then, of course, between Cap and Sam. So even with all of the stuff that's going on, the fact that they take these brief moments to just sort of humanize the relationship between them and the interactions between them, like you really buy that Cap and Natasha almost, they have like this almost brother-sister relationship to them, which I really enjoyed. And then even with Sam and Cap, like they almost feel like brothers in a way.
Yeah.
Brothers in arms. Sam almost becomes like a surrogate Bucky in a way without, obviously Bucky is in this movie, but he becomes almost that sort of role where he's like his sort of right-hand man.
Yeah.
It's just great. I mean, this movie just works again on so many levels. But yeah, good catch bringing up the Bucky reveal. Any other final points on Act 2 before we jump into Act 3?
Let's make our way.
Yeah, of course, right before we, of course, go into Act 3, I completely forgot. We got to do the Stan Lee cameo. Because right at the end, right before Act 3 begins, Cap steals the suit from the Smithsonian, and one of the workers is, of course, Stan Lee. And that is his cameo saying, oh man, I'm so getting fired, which was, I thought, a nice little cameo. So how would you rank this cameo, Chris? Of course, I can read out your rankings if you don't remember them again right now.
Yeah, that would help.
Yeah, so... I mean, are you thinking it's going to be higher or lower? I can read like sort of halfway, then I don't have to read through all 8 of them.
Probably higher. It's going to be in the upper half.
Okay, so upper half is Thor 2, Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, Iron Man 3, and then Cap 1 is number 5.
Let's put it at 2 right now.
Number 2. Oh, wow. That's pretty high. Okay, so you're going to put his appearance after Thor 2, where he's in the mental institution with...
Yep.
Yeah,
Selvig.
All right.
Yeah.
With Selvig. Yeah. All right. So that's, I think, pretty respectable position for him. Yeah. I think for me, I might put this at, you know, I'm between, I think I might put this at number, you know, this is tough. I'm also like somewhere around you, like either going to put it at number 2 or 3. So for my ranking right now, it's Thor 2, Thor 1, Cap 1, Iron Man 1, and the Avengers from 1 through 5. But, you know, I think I'm going to put this ahead of Thor 1 for now. So this will be my number 2 as well. So second time, because we also were the same on Thor 2. We put that as our number 1 each. Yeah.
And Iron Man 1, we were on the same page as well.
Yeah, of course, because that was the only one we had. Yeah. But yeah. So Cap 2 is also my number 2. I think a pretty great cameo. I think we've realized that cameos where Stan Lee gets a bit more of like a personality or like gets something to say is more interesting than like yes. where he just sort of like pops up for something. So yeah, great. Nice little cameo. And on we move to Act 3, which is, I mean, Act 3 is basically just the final fight scene with the helicarriers. But there is, you know, there's some other stuff there too, like, you know, reprogramming the helicarriers, and then of course the fight between Cap and Bucky. I mean, what's maybe something that stood out to you from Act 3, Chris?
Obviously the action. I really liked the Falcon scenes.
Yeah.
Him flying around and just basically dodging all the missiles.
Yeah, right.
But I feel like some of the scenes between Robert Redford and Sam Jackson I thought were really good. Mm-hmm. Of these, you know, two former good friends and now clearly opposition. It was kind of like a battle of the minds in a way. I also thought it was really interesting how in Act 1, Fury asks Alexander Pierce to call for a delay of Project Insight.
Yeah.
Obviously, we find out Alexander Pierce is the head of Hydra. You know, he plays along and says, yeah, sure. And immediately, you know, the next scene or two, we see Fury get assassinated, obviously hired by Pierce. So, I don't know, Pierce using Fury's death as leverage to convince the World Security Council to actually move forward with Project Insight was really interesting, only for Nick Fury to come back in Act 3 and be like, haha, you thought I was dead. I thought smarter than you, one step ahead. So I thought it was really cool to kind of see that pay off.
Yeah, no, I thought it was an interesting... Again, the motivations of Pierce are pretty interesting that he... And it also ties into the sort of backstory that we get early on about him and Fury and Bogota, right? Where he wanted to sort of go a more diplomatic approach, and Fury, as the local sort of SHIELD lead, or I forget the local SHIELD operative, I think is what they call it. He sort of just goes in more guns blazing and actually saves those hostages instead. And it seems to have really colored Pierce's perceptions and sort of worldview about how to approach different world events. So that I think is a really interesting take and how it sort of comes full circle for them. And it's a great mm-hmm. scene. I completely agree. I think for me, what stands out is that, you know, from all of the, you know, chaos and destruction that's going on, obviously the fight with and the setup for the helicarrier fight's great. But I think through it all, at the end of it, that final fight between Bucky and Cap is, uh-huh. I mean, I would say arguably maybe the most personal.
It's such a it's very
final fight that happens, because it's also brutal. I mean, the final fight is great hand to hand again, but there's a lot higher stakes for this fight rather than just trying to stop
the world is going to end.
Yeah. I mean, higher stakes for Cap personally than the world is going to end. Yeah. You know, people are going to get shot out. Like it's his friend. It's his personal friend. It's his last link to his past, really, that's still there, other than, you know, Peggy, who's very old. But yeah, I mean, like Cap is breaking his arm. He like chokes him out. And like, even in the end, like as the helicarrier is about to crash, like they're both at their like right at their very end, and they're like punching each other out. And it's just great. I mean, you have the whole thing about Cap saying that I'm with you till the end of the line. And it's just, I mean, it hits. It's really great. And of course, it all culminates with Bucky saving Cap at the very end when he falls mm-hmm. into the Potomac. So yeah, I mean, do you have any thoughts on that sort of whole bit?
I agree with all the points you're talking about. It's great hand-to-hand combat, but at the mm-hmm. same time, it is such a personal fight too.
Right.
And I really like the payoff of Steve, the entire third act, really trying to get through to Bucky.
Right.
And get through the brainwashing. And he does, you know, eventually, once he falls into, or basically right before he crashes into the river. So Cap won, I guess, on two levels, you know, with SHIELD / Hydra being defeated, but then also Bucky starting to really realize, like, I think I do know this guy.
Yeah.
So I think it was really well done.
Yeah, it's just such a great scene. It's just so, so, so good. I mean, are there any other bits from Act 3 that you really want to go into? I mean, I think for me that, like, I mean, the action is the action. The action's great. Yeah. But for me, it really comes down to sort of, I think those, the two scenes that we discussed, the whole interaction between Redford and Jackson's character, and then, of course, Bucky and Cap. But yeah of course, I think one thing I do want to mention also is the fact that all of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s files, Nat dumps them on the internet. I think realistically, practically, that would be a nightmare for the government, like that much sort of intelligence information getting out. I mean, of course, I understand the rationale that they were trying to like out Hydra within S.H.I.E.L.D., but all of the secrets, I mean, like that's, I think America's enemies would have a field day with that sort of information. I mean,
yes.
Yeah, but it was I mean, when they said destroy S.H.I.E.L.D., they really meant they were destroying S.H.I.E.L.D. in its entirety. I mean, they literally wreck the Triskelion. Yeah. They remove all of their privileged and intelligence data. They destroyed their helicarriers. But yeah, of course, I mean, I mean, the last bits are just sort of the wrapping up, you know. And I know we mentioned this again, with sort of the fall of New York here, on the flip side of, you know, Cap's distrust of the government because of this whole Hydra scenario, all of the stuff that happens with Cap basically destroying an entire arm of the government, essentially, really does sort of raise more of the government's suspicions of heroes, along with the Battle of New York. But I think that this one is really another one of these big ones that, again, leads to the Sokovia Accords and really leads to that whole sort of conflict and civil war. Of course, Fury going underground. And then, yeah, I mean, that's really the end of the movie. I mean, is there any final bits that you want to chat about Act 3?
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, we get a little tease of Rumlow's future.
Yes.
And I guess we leave off with Cap and Sam going to look for Bucky, which is referenced in Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
And then obviously picked up in Civil War. But then other than that, we have the post credits.
Yeah, we do have. And there, I mean, at least one of them is actually a pretty consequential post credit scene. Of course, it's between Baron von Strucker, and we get the introduction of Wanda and Pietro Maximoff at the end there, which is a nice little setup for Age of Ultron, of course, which isn't the next movie, but it is two movies from now. But I thought it was a really cool little post-credit scene. Of course, it was also directed by Joss Whedon, which was cool. Any thoughts on this?
I thought it was a great post-credit scene. Good introduction. A good tease to the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. I liked it. I wish we kind of got more of Strucker in the MCU. I think they underutilized him, but I think we could talk more about that in the Age of Ultron episode.
Yeah, we definitely can. And of course, there's also a post-credit scene of Bucky at the exhibit sort of learning about his own past, but that's...
How did he get through like the metal detector?
That's a good question. I don't know. Maybe literally. He took off the arm.
That would seem super suspicious. Well, he can't. It's not a detachable arm.
Right. At this point, it isn't. You're right. It isn't.
Only when he gets the Wakandan arm, is it detachable.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you know, he's a spy. He could probably have snuck into the Smithsonian.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. But yeah, that is Cap 2. I mean, Just a great movie, man. I had such a fun time watching this movie. Yeah, I guess we can jump right in. And I think what really works well is that this is, I think, the first also movie that like the MCU really tried one of those like different genres that we talked about. Like it wasn't just like a straight superhero movie, but they really did try to make it a political thriller. Yeah, exactly. They try and made it like a 70s political thriller. Of course, casting Robert Redford in it also was a bit on the nose. You know, he was known for doing a lot of like political thrillers back in the day too, but this really sort of solidified their approach to doing these sort of different genres within comic book movies, going through phase 2 and 3 and trying different things tonally. And I think it really worked. Obviously this one is a political thriller. Guardians is very much like a space opera, and they sort of go on from there. And it's just, I mean, it works really, really well. Obviously this really sort of set the tone for the MCU going up to Endgame and Infinity War. So,
yep.
Yeah. Chris, what would you rate this movie?
I'm going to let you go first because this is one of your favorites.
It is. I mean, this is always ranked up amongst my favorites in the MCU. And, you know, I think I'm finally going to break the threshold, and I think this is going to get a full 5 out of 5 from me.
Wow.
Yeah.
A perfect score.
I mean, it's really hard to find things to knock about this movie. I mean, there are obviously things that this movie doesn't do perfectly, but I think just the experience of this movie and the way that it moves, the action, the personal stakes, the character relationships, like it just fires, I think, really on every single cylinder.
Yeah.
And it's hard to really knock this movie. I have such a fun time every time I watch it.
That's fair. That's fair. Well, I give it a 4.75.
That's illegal. Where's that quarter point going off for you?
You know, there just wasn't enough Iron Man in this.
Okay, well, you know, Cap 3, you'll get more Iron Man. But, I mean, what
spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler. But what really does is that sort of quarter point sort of knockdown for you?
You know, I need to give it more thought. I don't know. It's not my number one MCU film.
Yes, that's that I know.
I don't know. I agree with you. It's hard to knock it. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't fit a 5.0 for me. I need to think about why, but there's just something about it.
Okay.
But I actually enjoyed this movie a lot more watching it this time around than I have the previous, you know, first or second or third, whatever, how many times I've seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually moved up in my rankings, you know, compared to previous viewings.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, I'm curious to maybe hear offline why this may be, what you end up determining why it doesn't maybe hit the full 5, but 4.7, I can't get too mad about 4.75. That's definitely one of your highest ratings for an MCU movie so far.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess any final thoughts before we wrap up here, Chris?
No, I'm excited for Guardians.
I'm sure you are.
As you know.
Yes.
So the thing is, I watched Guardians 1, I don't know, maybe like half a year ago. It's like 6 months or so ago. So we will see.
Yeah.
We'll see, you know.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching Guardians 1 too. It's been a while since I've seen it. I haven't seen it as recently as you have, but I am very much, I mean, I think from this movie on, really, the MCU is just on like a string of hit after hit after hit. Like, what really is the next sort of dud movie that comes after Cap 2? Is it really, I mean, not even a dud, but like maybe Ant-Man and the Wasp is like,
maybe Ant-Man. Well, Ant-Man and the Wasp, I think, was definitely a dud.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know. I agree. Like, I don't think they really... Oh, I don't know. Guardians 2 is...
I mean,
I know you're not a huge fan, but like, I know overall it's kind of middling for some people.
I wouldn't say it's bad, though. Like, no, it's resonated with a lot of people. So, I mean, I would really maybe say...
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
So for like 4 years, really, the MCU was just on sort of a string of hits from here on out, which is makes our life easier talking about it. We don't have to be so negative like with Thor 2.
Cool. But, then we'll get Ant-Man and the Wasp and then Captain Marvel right after. So
yeah, I mean, you know, but even those movies, like I guess compared to what we've got now in phase 4 and 5 are not really, they're just a bit boring, but they're not really dud duds like, you know, Quantumania, for example. I mean, but we will be getting the best Ant-Man soon. That is Ant-Man 1. That's 3 episodes? Yeah, 3 episodes from now. So, but yeah, I guess that is Captain America and the Winter Soldier. Any final thoughts before we wrap up here, Chris?
No, let's bring it home.
Sounds good. So, of course, thank you, as always, to our wonderful listeners for listening. Of course, if you're listening to us, you know that you can find us anywhere that you listen to your podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or YouTube Music. If you like this podcast, please do rate, like, and subscribe us, as it does help us, you know, get to more ears out there. If you have any thoughts or want to further the conversation, we do have an email address, which is ostrichtechnique@gmail.com. Please feel free to email us there if you have any other additional thoughts that you'd like to share with us, and we can maybe read it out on a future episode. But yeah, I think for myself and Chris, thanks for joining us for this wonderful episode, and we'll see you next time for Guardians of the Galaxy.
See you then.
Yep. See you guys around. Bye.